I am more than encouraged by the good number that's out and the new faces that are here this evening, as opposed to yesterday, people that I love dearly who are from this area, who have come out to support this effort. And I know that the brethren here are very excited to have you here supporting this effort, but I especially am very, very thankful for you, and I mean that. It's a real privilege and it's a real honor to come and worship with you. I like the thought of how our God had foreseen all this and was even mentioned in the prayer, how this was all already seen before He made man, of the design of the church and what we're doing right now, to have the period where people would be allowed to come and worship in spirit and in truth through the blood of Christ, and to approach Him in His mercy and to anticipate saying those things to Him face to face. It's a beautiful concept, and I'm thankful that you see the need for it, and I'm grateful that you're here. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1, the preacher is analyzing life, and he's looking at various aspects of life, and he reaches a profound conclusion where he says in Ecclesiastes chapter 1, where you have the common statement, in verse 2, vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor, in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away, and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. And he goes on to say in verse 12, I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man, by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. And we understand he goes through the book and begins to analyze some things specifically to make his point, his observation about it all being vain. And that's what he is looking at. He's looking at life under the sun, and he's trying to figure out what endeavor in this world is worth it all. What earthly endeavor can I go through where this is fulfilling, this is satisfying? And he's just looking at all the experiences that life has to offer, and his conclusion is it's just not here. That if you're going to make this world your end all, if you're going to make this world the only reason you're living, then I'm going to tell you, you're in for disappointment, is what he's saying. Because you are in pursuit of something that cannot satisfy you as a spiritual being, and something that is not lasting in this world. And so he says it is vain. It is accomplishing nothing. That all the effort you put forth and all the struggle you go through, and you're right back where you were before you started. It's just an empty pursuit. Trying to fill up a bucket with holes. It's empty. It's vain. Trying to rake the leaves during fall. You get out there, you do all that work. The next morning, can't even tell you did anything. It's all right back where you started. It's a vain effort for a period of time. And that's what he's saying. And I particularly like this concept of grasping for wind. He said it's all vanity and grasping for wind. Now, I mean, can you think of a better way of describing it? I mean, what better way to show just how futile life is than to say, I'm going to get a handful of air, and I'm going to have something. And there's nothing there. And so it's just like you can't do that. You cannot get hold of air. You cannot grab wind. You can reach for it, but you're not going to grab it. You're not going to tie it down. And so he says, that's the way this is. You're grasping for wind if you're going to look in this world to make it your end all, to make it your ultimate aim in life, and just live for this world. You're shot, is what he's saying. You're up against something that will never work. And there are many reasons why this is so, but I've only selected a few for us to look at because I need to be reminded of this. And I know you do as well as a person trying to go to heaven. And the reason why it's grasping for wind and why it's such a vain thing to try and find something lasting in this world is because, number one, you're dealing with things that have a very limited nature to them. That there is only so much you can attain in your earthly pursuits. And that's what he talks about in chapter 2, where he goes through and he's testing all the different opportunities life presents. And he's trying to see what in all of the experiences of life, can there be some type of substance? Can there be some type of meaning and fulfillment? And so he goes through and he's looking at everything that can be found. He said in verse 1, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. But surely this also was vanity. I said of laughter, madness. Of mirth, what does it accomplish? I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom, how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. I made my works great. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. And then he goes talking about other things he acquired. So here he goes. He says, all right, round it up. Give me everything life has to offer. I'm going to see if it's there. Let me see what I can find. And the thing is, he had the resources to do this. That he was a man who was very wealthy. And of course, we know he was blessed with wisdom from God. And so here's a man who had the wealth, who had the wisdom, who had everything that a person could possibly want from life. And he began to test each thing. And he tested it at a level that you and I probably could never do. I mean, he was able to see it to its finest. He said, let me first start with the pursuit of just living for pleasure. I mean, if I could just live each day and just feel good and be happy all the time, be entertained all the time, certainly if I live like that, then I won't have any problems. Then I will be complete and full, and that I will finally have something where I don't have to worry about anything. Everything's okay. I'm just entertained all the time. Mirth and pleasure. The very first thing he starts with, and he says, it's not there. It's not there. It's not lasting. And really, we didn't need him to tell us that. I mean, we know from our own experiences, those things don't last. And from what we can see from around us, people who even define pleasure, people who even define entertainment, even they're not satisfied. It doesn't take long to go to an example of the world where people who were known for their comedy, people who were known for their entertainment, and yet they were empty inside. They were lacking. They were illustrating the very point Solomon's making. That it's not, if you think, well, if I can just go out throughout the day laughing all the time, I would have found it. I would have found the meaningful life. He says, you can't do it. It's not there. It doesn't exist like that. And to think that somehow somebody can live like that and escape all the problems of life, all the disadvantages that come, as he talks about in chapter 3, then you are blind is what you are, is what he's saying, because it's just not there. And then he said, I started building stuff. And I think that is still something that we think will define us. That we will somehow have made our mark in this world if we just start building a bunch of stuff like he did. He said, I made my works great. I made myself houses. I built houses. Now keep in mind, here's a man who had the resources to pull this off. Now if you go 1 Corinthians 10, read that sometime. It's a very fascinating, detailed outline of what this man was going through, because everybody in the world wanted to come and hear and see Solomon, because this man was beyond wise. I mean, kings and queens would come to him for advice because he could figure things out. He could give the right judgment. And the man was stinking wealthy. I mean, the guy had so much money coming his way. If you look at what it says in verse 14 of chapter 10 of 1 Kings, 666 talents of gold annually was brought in. And one source I found said that would be equivalent to just under $300 million a year. I mean, you could look at all the gold shields the guy was able to make. I mean, he had all this revenue coming in, all the fine stuff of the world, and he says, I spent it, okay? And I tried to live as lavishly as possible. I built myself houses, is what he said. I planted vineyards. Well, if you ever go to the Biltmore, I mean, that's the tour right there, is the house and the vineyards. I mean, just to see just how well this guy was living so many years ago, how well that family was living. Well, Solomon had many places like that. He had many places like that. And he says, I had servants in my house. I had servants born in my house. Well, that would be the solution, right? You had people serving you all day long. Certainly you would be satisfied. You ring a bell and somebody's right there. What do you want? What do you need? That has to be the meaning of life. Solomon says, I had rooms full of them. I had all kinds of singers. I had all the ability to entertain myself any time of the day. I had all types of gold coming in from around the world. And it was mine. And nobody was taking it from me. So here was a man who was living. He was living the definition of opulence. He was living the definition of true wealth and power. And I just found pictures of what that would be like, because I can't go around my house taking pictures. This would defeat the purpose. But this guy could. He could live something like this, I'm sure. I mean, when you think of royalty and the finest of the world, I mean, Solomon had it, okay? This is not a guy who was struggling to make his bills, okay? This guy had everything. And he even said, what can you do more than I have? You can't do that. I have more than you'll ever have, is what he was saying. And so it's not like you can test this life differently or in a better way than I could, because I tested it to the finest level possible. And so his conclusion is, you are in for disappointment. If you think you can turn to laughter, if you think you can turn to chemicals, if you think you can turn to architect or servants or abundance, it is not there. It is not there because these things do not satisfy. He says in verse 11, I looked on all the works that my hands had done and all the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed, all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. Now, Solomon, just wait a minute. If you had just a little bit more gold, if you had just a few more houses or another couple vineyards or a few more pools, or if you had just a few more people in the world praising your name, then you would have found something in this world worth holding on to. No. He's telling us, look, you might as well try and grab hold of wind as to try and find meaning and satisfaction in this stuff. You aren't made to find satisfaction in these things. And so you cannot think that this will be the summation of your life. It's a vain pursuit. Another reason why living for this world is grasping for wind is because you can't stay here. Even if you do find a good stride, okay, even if you do find a good pattern in life and you're finding a life that you really enjoy, you have to leave it. None of us get to stay here. He says in verse 15, I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why was I then more wise? Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. Well, he's right. I mean, the bottom line is, even for us as God's people, even when we have a life that is rewarding and full, which he talks about in the book of Ecclesiastes, that God allows us to find, even then we still have to leave it behind. And he goes through and looks at this in several places in the book of Ecclesiastes. And I like what he says in chapter 3, that God helps us see that we're just like the beast, in the sense that we all are dependent on the breath God gives us, and it's all temporary. That we all living beings, and we're going to die. For what happens to the sons of men also happens to animals. One thing befalls them, as one dies, so dies the other. Surely they all have one breath. Man has no advantage over animals, for all his vanity. And of course, he's not talking about a moral thing. He's not talking about your spirituality. He's talking about your breath, your life, and that you are just as vulnerable. And if you are at your end, that dog's in a better shape than you are, in the sense that the dog gets to stay here and you don't for a period of time. So we're just, hey, we are all living breath to breath, is what he's pointing out. So why would I make this world my God? Why would I bow down to this world each and every day and live only for it? Especially when I see this from people all around leaving and not coming back. Why would I live only for this world? Especially when I cannot take anything with me. I see brethren from Beaver Dam here. I'm honored to see that. They heard me tell the story of how a good friend of ours, family, a man that I have a lot of respect for, who is a godly man, elder, a successful farmer, very wealthy man in Texas. Well, he passed away a couple of years ago, and I was there at his place, staying with the family. And as I'm sitting here at this man's house, and it's a nice, big, huge house. I mean, it had an apartment there for me to stay in. Land all over the place there in Texas. I mean, just a very successful family. But, you know, this thought right here just struck me. I mean, because he was always so generous to people, always willing to give, always handing out, very, just very generous with the prosperity God had given him. But as I'm sitting there on his property, waiting for his funeral, you know, for some reason, it just really hit more that day than ever before. That guy took nothing with him. I mean, as generous as he was with his things in this life, he didn't even take a blade of grass with him. It all stayed behind. All those millions he had, he didn't even take a penny with him. It's all still here in this world. And that's the point that Paul is telling us in 1 Timothy chapter 6, that your best option is to be godly and to be content. That's the best way to live. But do not live for this world, because you brought nothing into this world and it is certain. You know, we hear, well, two things are certain, death and taxes. Well, no, there's at least a third one. It's certain that you're not taking anything with you, is what Paul says. Look at what you have. Look at what you possess. It's staying here and you're leaving. And it doesn't matter what it is. You don't get to hold on to anything. You came in here empty-handed. You're leaving empty-handed. You didn't bring a mortgage with you. You're not taking one with you. You didn't bring car keys with you. You didn't bring jewelry with you. Okay? You didn't bring any of these things with you. You came naked. You leave naked, is what he's saying. So why in the world would we live for anything just for this world? And not only that, Solomon points out the fact that not only do you leave empty-handed, you leave your stuff behind for other people to use and possess. And that's a struggle he mentions quite often in this book, and it's a legitimate struggle, because you have to show wisdom, right? You have to show diligence and dedication to make and increase. That takes skill. That takes ability. That takes drive. That's what he was seeing. But he says the folly is, despite all my wisdom and diligence, I have to leave it to people who have not shown the same diligence, and they're going to rule over all my stuff. And so I hated all my labor. Chapter 2, he says in verse 18, I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool. Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled, in which I had shown myself wise under the sun. Everything you have is going to go to somebody else. Every tool, every piece of clothing. Look at this. I wore this on purpose. I mean, every so often, widows will let me get ties. They give me ties, and I think that's a big honor. This one in particular was owned by my wife's grandfather, and, you know, the family wanted me to have some of his ties, and so this is one of them. But it's going to happen to you. Somebody else is going to own this one day. If I don't wear it out, somebody else is going to own this tie. Somebody else is going to own your clothes, your cars, your land, your house. It's going to happen. Somebody else is going to have possession of all your things one day. And so if that's the case, then certainly I don't need to make this stuff my God, because it all stays behind. Now, does that mean, okay, well, you know, what's the point? I'm not even going to try and work for an increase, because what's the point? No, that's not the right conclusion either. Solomon says that, no, that's not the right interpretation either. He says nothing is better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. So it is a blessing from God for us to pursue a better life, okay? To use skill and wisdom, to learn and to grow and apply ourselves to accomplish a task. That's a beautiful thing, to be exerted that way, to be fulfilled with purpose like that, of living for certain goals. That's a blessing from God. It's a gift from God. So don't say, well, I'm just going to sit back and just wait to die. That's the way I should. No. Live your life to the fullest. He says in chapter 5 that the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. So there is benefit and value in living a life. Well, he even says that wisdom excels folly. Okay, living a disciplined, wise, prudent life excels folly. Okay, so there's huge advantages in being a godly person who is wise. But, that's the point, don't make it your God. He says that he who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase. This also is vanity. So, keep a proper balance. Strike a balance there. Okay, you work for it, you use it properly, but you don't worship it, is what he's saying. In Proverbs 23, it says in verses 4 and 5, do not overwork to be rich. Because of your own understanding, cease. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches themselves, certainly, he says, make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle toward heaven. And so I have to know that. Okay, I'm to use these things to God's glory, but I'm not to worship them above God. Because it's not there. And it doesn't take long. That's what he says in Proverbs 8. Wisdom is crying out all over the place. Learn from people, is what he's saying. Learn from people who have tried to pursue these things and serve these things and have not found it in terms of substance. I think of this quote I came across years ago, talking about Miley Cyrus and how at the time she was worth $1 billion. I don't know if she still is or not. But the thing that struck me was what her father said in response to that. And he said, I should have stayed in Tennessee. I'd erase all of it if I could. In other words, you know, what it did to her and what the money did to their life. He said, I wish I was back in the country, back in Tennessee, away from all these things. At least that's what he was realizing and thinking at that time. So wisdom cries out. Wisdom is shouting all over the place. Don't live for this world because it's not there. It is not there. And just dismiss the belief, well, if I had just a little bit more, I'd finally be... No, that's a lie. Don't even go that route. You're grasping for air. Number three, it's a vain pursuit, okay? Grasping for wind to live for this world because not only do we leave, but we're all going to be forgotten. And that's something he talks about in chapter 2. That there is no more remembrance of the wise and of the fool forever, since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And how does a wise man die? As the fool. Unfortunately, this is the reality of life. We can make our mark with so many people for a period of time, but eventually all of us are going to leave this world little by little, and it's going to reach a point where people won't even know we were here. That's what he was talking about in chapter 1. He says, hey, starting out, this is what's so vain about life. That one generation passes away, another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. And his conclusion is that life just seems to go on without us. That we don't stop the rotation of the earth when we leave. We don't stop the cycle of life. Life just keeps on going, just like it was going before we got here. And when you look at a picture like this of generations coming, and then, of course, I tried to illustrate people leaving. Do those people care about what he's going through or she's going through and leaving? No, they're concerned about this. They're concerned about the world. One generation comes and another generation passes away, but the earth is still abiding. And so life is going to continue without us. And so we need to be people who realize that we have just a few moments in this world and then we're going to be forgotten. He points out that there is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come. And that's just a truth. When I would travel 41 through Indiana, going up to Illinois to see my dad, I saw one time this area on the side of the road that was all grown up. And I, closer look, I realized it was a cemetery. This was not a picture of it, but it was a cemetery, and it had just been neglected. And I don't know how many years it had been neglected, but it's obvious that it's just whoever was caring for it is no longer there. And all those people who were so important to this world at one time, at least from their perspective, they are being forgotten. Their names are being forgotten. They're being erased from time. And people are zipping by on Highway 41 and nobody cares. Nobody cares that they were here. And that's how it's going to be in your world and mine. We see our life and we look at our life and the world just seems to just all center around us, at least from our perspective. And yet we're all just shadows. I mean, you look at your own family. I mean, you and I, we can go so far in our genealogy record. You know, we can get several generations there for the most part. But when you get into the great-grandparents, I mean, you know, some can do it, some can't. But even go beyond that. Well, what was your great-grandfather's grandmother's name? Now, unless you do some serious research, you won't know that. Were these people important? Were they significant? Did they matter? Did they matter in your family? Yes, they mattered. Well, who are they? I don't know. I'm pretty sure there was a great-grandmother there of the great-grandfather, but I don't know. I don't know her name. And that's what Solomon's saying. You're going to be forgotten. There's going to come a time when people are going to say, who? Huh? What? No, I don't. Never heard of them. Don't know who that is. Even in your own family, that's going to happen. And so we have to realize that there is more to life than this life. Now, again, let's not be totally pessimistic, because, you know, Solomon makes some good points. You know, you need to be a person who is wise with your job. Enjoy these things. Enjoy your job, your family, your health, your companions, your time. All these things he observes. But just remember this, it's just temporary. And I always mention that to God when I pray, thanking him for blessings. I ask him for the wisdom to realize it's all temporary. Because that's the perspective he wants us to live with. And let me say this one last thing about why it is a vain pursuit to live only for this world is because you're going to expire, that it's all going to decay for you. Your health, okay? Nobody gets to hold on to their health forever. Every single one of us is going to lose our health. And it's going to happen, especially if we have long life. It's going to leave us. Nobody gets to hold on to it. It's all temporary. And so obviously the wise perspective is, remember now your Creator in the days of youth before the difficult days come. And the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. Well, every person who reaches that wishes they had known that and lived with that perspective years ago. That is a wise perspective. So yeah, enjoy it while you have it, okay? Use it. It is passing away. But expiration also implies judgment. And that's what he says in chapter 12, verses 13 and 14. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. And really, you cannot surpass that perspective of a person who realizes that living for God is all that matters, no matter how much money you have or don't have, no matter how much fame you have or don't have, whatever, it doesn't matter. The only thing that is significant about life is if you have a relationship with God, if you know your Creator and you're preparing to see Him in judgment. That's it. And if you try to live for anything else, you've missed the whole point of life and you're chasing after something that will leave you empty as the day you start pursuing that. And so that is the wisest perspective we can live with, preparing to meet our God. And so I think if you look at what he says about grasping for wind, there are some fascinating conclusions he makes. But hopefully, foremost, we are ending our life with God. And that's the beauty of these moments like we have, like in a meeting, is that if you're not a child of God, we like to give people an opportunity to obey the gospel. And if you realize that you've lived separately apart from God and violating his will, you've committed sin, then by the mercy and grace of God, you can be forgiven of that sin because of our precious Savior who died for us and was raised from the dead. And if you believe Jesus is the Son of God, I mean, his life, his resurrection proved that. And you're willing to confess that and turn away from sin and be immersed in water for the forgiveness of sins, Acts 2:38, then all things are ready to help you do that even tonight. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation, please respond as we stand and sing.
Oh, happy day that fixed my choice on Thee, my Savior and my God. Well, may this glowing heart rejoice and tell its raptures all of